This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Upgraded levees pass the test. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. Following Hurricane Katrina, billions were spent on helping New Orleans avoid another flooding catastrophe. Hear how the project fared with Hurricane Ida. With all that's happening in the world right now, a new approach to thinking about and managing your stress. Plus, why do people feel the need to hold on to more than 100,000 unread emails? And how to speak up and be more confident as we return to the office.
I think it's really important for us to make sure that the words that we say to ourselves are kind and compassionate, because you may not want to be criticized by other people, but so many people allow themselves to criticize themselves so harshly that you're essentially carrying a bully around inside.
Linda Ugolo, a speaking confidence coach, on how to make yourself heard. Well, shortly after Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans back in 2005, the city went to work on building a $14.5 billion system of gates, flood walls, and levees that would protect it against another once-in-a-century storm. And his first big test came last Sunday when Hurricane Ida, a ferocious Category 4, plowed through the Gulf of Mexico into Louisiana. An update on how the system fared from Dr. David Rogers, professor of geological engineering at Missouri University of Science and Technology. David, your initial take.
Well, it's actually holding and doing what it was designed to do. Every time you have a major storm of this caliber that hits New Orleans, you're going to lose power. That's about once every 10 years on average. And they'll pick that up over the next couple days, depending on how much got taken out, and they'll finally get it all pumped out. But that's how it works. They don't have enough capacity in pumps to keep up with this size of a storm, the volume of water that flows. And you have to remember, the whole place is below sea level, just about. So it doesn't drain without pumps.
Yeah. So the $14.5 billion roughly that was spent on upgrades after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, did you think when the project was completed that it would be good enough?
Well, that's the common, that's the way Congress and most of the country looks at it. Unfortunately, it's a dynamic environment, and you have settlement going on there every day of the year. And the problem isn't just the total settlement. The problem is the differential settlement. That's the one that breaks structures up. If the whole structure just sinks evenly, we just have less flood protection. But we have two things. We have the differential settlement, and then we have the total settlement, and then we have sea level rise. So all those things are dynamic. Our understandings of them change every year. And one of the problems we have in coastal Louisiana is every time we add one cubic yard of earth, that surcharges the soft, peaty soils, the organic soils underneath it, and they start sinking. So you just had a levee that went 1 foot up, and maybe it went 6 inches down. So your net difference was 6 inches, not 12 inches.
Right.
That's the problem with New Orleans. So you have to look at it continuously. It's like being a dam keeper and watching, you know, the level of the reservoir. You just got to watch it continuously, and you have to plug and patch and plug and patch and plug and patch. And unfortunately, 70% of that money comes from the feds, and they don't work fast. They're reactive to things like this rather than proactive. So they felt like, hey, we spent $14.7 billion. You know, we shouldn't have to spend any more.
Oh.
Well, it's the nation's storm drain. 41% of the continental United States drains through Mississippi River going by New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Dr. David Rogers. He is professor of geological engineering at Missouri University of Science and Technology. We're talking about how New Orleans has fared, given the massive upgrades the city put in place following Hurricane Katrina. So from an engineering basic standpoint, for those, say, who don't live in the, in a coastal community, what has happened to New Orleans? What's better now than 16 years ago?
Well, they didn't do much they never got the system finished that they had designed back in the 1970s because they're kept having rescissions come from Washington saying, well, we wanted you to get this done in 8 years, but now we're going to stretch it into 17 years. And eventually it got stretched into 33 years and they got caught. They had a major event in 2005 and they didn't quite have the system completed. It was about 97% completed, but they also had some walls that were about 1.7 feet too low because of surveying errors. So those things are the kind of things that go into something when you have, you know, more than 300 miles of protection you have to provide.
Thanks, David. David Rogers, professor of geological engineering at Missouri University of Science and Technology. Coming up next, speaking up at work. You know, in November, I'll celebrate 16 years of hosting this show in one form or another. Whenever those kinds of milestones come up, it's special. And Cuts Clothing is having an anniversary of their own this month. It's been 5 years since Cuts founder Steve Borelli decided to create clothing for any and every occasion, like their signature buttery soft Pika Pro Tri-Blend t-shirts and polos, cozy Hyperloop French Terry fabric hoodies, and more. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. I love their stuff. From their polos to their crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. They've created a comfortable fit without compromising on timeless, universally flattering style. If you haven't worn one yourself, it's time to try the only shirt worth wearing. And this week is the perfect time. This month marks the Cuts 5th anniversary. And they're doing it big with two collection drops, a product launch, and a week-long special event. Go to cutsclothing.com/Gordon to get 25% off site-wide during their anniversary sale. That's 25% off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Imagine this, you have a great idea, but you're also too nervous to tell anyone about it. Research from New York University found that despite the numerous benefits for both individuals and organizations as a whole, people don't speak up about ideas. Why don't most people speak up at work, and how do you get comfortable with doing it? In-depth analysis from Linda Ugolo, speaking confidence coach and author of a book called Delight in the Limelight. Linda, why is this an issue for some?
You know, people don't realize that speaking confidence is not something that you have necessarily growing up, because we are programmed actually to keep silent in many ways. Like, think of the messages we heard. Silence is golden. Don't speak back to your elders. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything else at all. And add on to that times we were shamed, belittled, or rejected. And then you've got people, you know, who maybe as a young child felt free in their self-expression, but 20 years later, they can't speak in front of a group of people without breaking into a sweat.
Wow. All right. So for those who are confident about speaking up these days, is it safe to assume they had free run of their mouths when they were growing up?
Well, I think that is one avenue that it took. So either they felt like they were encouraged to speak their mind and to share their thoughts, or maybe they also had inhibiting experiences and messages, but they found ways to get over it. And that's what I like to help people do, is to get over it, because you can.
Step one would be what then, Linda?
I think it would be to uncover the messages and experiences that you had where you felt hurt, rejected, you know, that you, it wasn't safe to speak. And step two would be to resolve them, to allow yourself to revisit those things in the way you would have liked to have been helped that unfortunately you weren't.
And then after that, we might transition to what?
I think it's really important for us to make sure that the words that we say to ourselves are kind and compassionate, because you may not want to be criticized by other people, but so many people allow themselves to criticize themselves so harshly that you're essentially carrying a bully around inside. So you need to make sure that you change your dialogue so that you are the kind, encouraging person that you want others to be for you.
Yeah. We're speaking with Linda Ugolo. She's a speaking confidence coach, also author of a book called Delight in the Limelight. And we're talking about speaking up at work. I presume this takes some practice. How do you practice that?
Well, the clearing part is a reflective and maybe a more psychological process. When you find yourself that you have dealt with those experiences, then there are things that you can do to repattern your habits. So you can, if you want to feel relaxed, practice relaxation. If you want to feel more confident, what does confidence feel like in your body? Think of places that you already feel confident and notice what that feels like and do it. So it may be that you are into running or you love cooking in the kitchen or wherever you feel like you own your space, that's what you want to borrow and bring that into the place where you are standing up to speak.
We've got a lot of people heading back into the office for in-person, face-to-face meetings, I guess, as the weeks and months roll on here. Some people may be rusty, but this also may be an opportunity for some folks to try it out for the first time, I guess.
Yes, for sure. And I'd say that, you know, a lot of people have been living under generalized anxiety for the last year and a half. And if you want to feel confident, you're going to have to deal with that generalized anxiety. So I recommend to people to do things to allow yourself to get back to a place of neutral at the very least and motivated, you know, at the best. So that means doing things that release your stress. So whether that's meditation or exercise or listening to motivational speakers, you know, do what you can to surround yourself in a space where you feel like you can be at your best.
Thanks, Linda. Linda Ugolo. Again, the book is called Delight in the Limelight. Coming up next, vaccines dividing sports fans.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could be with us. COVID-19 screening requirements for sporting events are expanding nationwide to include proof of vaccination as the highly contagious Delta variant fills ICU beds, even in states such as Oregon, which largely staved off the worst infection rates earlier in the pandemic. More from Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Rachel, set this up.
Well, how people react to this, perhaps not surprisingly, depends on how they feel about vaccines. So, for instance, in Portland, Oregon, where vaccine rates tend to be quite high, the Major League Soccer Portland Timbers and National Women's Soccer League Portland Thorns fans are very excited about that stadium's requirement that they be vaccinated or produce proof of a recent negative test. A couple hours south at the two college football campuses, major campuses in the state, Oregon and Oregon State, you know, many people are also happy, but others are very unhappy and want refunds to their season tickets or, you know, are just upset that this added burden is being, you know, tacked on to their requirement to be a fan.
Yeah. Are we aware of anything that points to, say, outdoor events being spreaders?
Actually, you know, that seems to be an emerging theory. So for instance, the state health officials in the state of Oregon recently instituted an outdoor mask mandate for people at big events who can't socially distance. So, for instance, like a football game, if you're crammed together, you know, yelling and screaming for 3 hours, they say you should wear a mask. And in fact, that is the rule now in that state, even among vaccinated people.
Wow. I was curious, too, as I was kind of combing through your story, does the price of a ticket and how much you've paid have anything to do with how you feel about masks, politics aside?
That's a good question. I mean, certainly, you know, football season tickets are no joke, especially if they're good seats. And so I think some people were frustrated that You know, they've invested all this money, sometimes year after year, into this program, and now they're being required to do something that they maybe don't want to do. So I'm guessing that probably the money does have something to do with how people react, but I didn't see specific evidence of that.
So explain kind of the refund side of this. There are some fans pushing back for what, at least college sports?
Yes, at Oregon State University in Corvallis, about 250 season tickets, you know, people who own about 250 season tickets requested either refunds or deferrals to next season, either because they weren't vaccinated or because, you know, they don't like the requirement, or, you know, some people just don't want the bother of having to produce a negative test for every home game because, you know, as people in states where the infection rate is rising know, it can sometimes be difficult to get a test on a quick turnaround, and it can be expensive. So some people just simply don't want to deal with that.
We're speaking with Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called "Some Fans Cheer Vaccination Proof for Sports Events, Others Demand Refunds." How about the differing policies, though? I mean, you walk through some of this stuff, right? I think you pointed out U.S. Open tennis. If you've got one vaccine shot, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think partly those you know, that those one shot requirements are because these rules are very recent. I mean, they've all pretty much been launched in the past couple of weeks, and we see them being launched with the rise of the Delta variant and the rise in infections that are sending people to the ICU. And so that's part of it, I think. You know, a couple of the requirements in Oregon actually require full vaccination. You know, two shots. And, you know, 2 weeks after your second shot. Whereas, like, as you mentioned at the U.S. Open, it's one at the New Orleans Saints. It's one shot. And I think that's partly because they want to encourage vaccination. So at the Saints game, for instance, last week, people could get a shot right outside the stadium, you know, get their certification and then walk right in. So it isn't necessarily about, you know, it's partly about protection, of course, but it's also about pushing people to get at least start the vaccination process amid these high infection rates.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, it does come down to money sometimes. These are businesses, even if you're a big-time college football program. So, I mean, these schools, the sports teams, I mean, they want fans in attendance, right? So I get the sense they're making every effort to do that.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the Pac-12 conference in which Oregon and Oregon State played didn't have any fans at all last year.
Yeah.
So they really need this revenue. And I think that they, you know, it's possible that part of their calculus is, hey, if we get everyone in there vaccinated, then maybe even if infection rates stay high, we can say, hey, we should be able to allow these games to take place with full stadiums because everybody inside is protected. It's very, very unlikely that they'll get infected, you know. These breakthrough infections do happen, but they're relatively rare, and they're not sending people to the hospital, the numbers of, you know, like people that are unvaccinated. And so they're really doing everything they can to get people back in those stadiums.
I'm just curious, out of I think you said roughly 250 cancellations, say, of tickets at University of Oregon for football. There's also, I guess, a calculation that, well, okay, you can cancel. There are, from your 250 cancellations, there are 800 people waiting to buy those tickets.
Yeah, and that actually was at Oregon State,
okay.
which I think is an important distinction because Oregon State was not ranked in the preseason top 25 like Oregon was. And so I think there might be more people lining up to buy tickets at Oregon than at Oregon State.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. First full weekend of September. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, a different way to manage stress. Also, envisioning your financial goals. Plus, how many unread emails is too many? And the new homeowners who stumbled on a message in their pantry. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, we're still dealing with the whiplash of uncertainty from the pandemic and the emotions it provokes, things like frustration, anxiety, maybe anger, fear. To help us through, psychologists recommend an approach called acceptance. They define it as the ability to see reality clearly and embrace all our emotions, both pleasant and unpleasant. It's a focus of a widely used and studied therapeutic approach called acceptance and commitment therapy. In-depth analysis from Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, take us through it.
This is about something psychologists call acceptance. And it's this idea that we need to really see reality clearly. When we're going through tough times, when life is lousy, we look at reality, both the good and the bad, and we try to take it all in. So you don't deny the situation and try to bear down with forced positivity. You don't try to control it by fixing something that's truly unfixable. And you don't wallow in it and give up. You just accept it. You know what? This isn't great, but I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah. I often like to say, too, there's always somebody who has it way worse than I do. So let's try to figure this out. But that's not, I mean, it's one thing to say it, right? It takes practice, as you say. Meaning what?
Meaning you really have to adjust those thoughts and do this every day and every hour of every day. You know, you have to wake up and think, oh, my gosh, you know, just like you said, there's somebody who's got it worse. They're in Afghanistan. They're in Louisiana right now with a hurricane.
Yeah.
You know, you have to constantly reach for this acceptance.
Your Uncle Sidney, who you quote in your piece, had a phrase that was sort of a branch of suck it up, buttercup. And he used to say, embrace the suck, right? What do you mean?
Embrace the suck. This is a military saying. It's a saying they say in the military. I don't know that, you know, they say it from the top down, but they say it. And it's sort of, you know, get a handle on where you are. As Uncle Sidney said, it's look at your situation, you know, accept it, and then try to advance. And so he is a Vietnam veteran, long-term Navy person. And so he's always sort of said this in tough times, like, hey, you have to embrace this. And it doesn't mean you have to like it, but you have to understand where you are, accept it in order to move forward.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece entitled How to Deal with Stress in Your Life, Embrace It. All right, so you got some advice from experts here, and one of the things they said was slow down.
Slow down. We just careen from one thing to another. I mean, I can't be the only one doing this. And, you know, we finish this task for work and we're rushing to lunch, make a sandwich, rush to the next thing, grab the kids, sit them in front of the computer for work, school, all of these things. We're just careening without stopping for a minute. And so the psychologists say, look, just even three big breaths after a task that you finish. You send an email. Just take three breaths. Think for a minute what you're doing, and this will slow you down. Also, you can do things more slowly. We do not have to rush through making coffee. We can make it a tiny bit slower. And when you do this, you're calming your physiological response to stress. It's actually a really powerful thing.
How do you distance yourself? That was another piece of advice.
You can use language, and so you can use your name. So instead of, oh, everything's horrible, I can speak to myself, Elizabeth. Yes, it's not great, but you're doing well. You're moving through your day. You're doing the things you need to do. You're taking care of things. When you use your name, you're actually accessing a different part of your brain than when you're just talking to yourself. Neuroscientists know this. And so this is how it's a way of distancing you from your stress.
The guy you reference in your story who developed something called acceptance and commitment therapy said you need to also try to practice a sunset mode of mind, which means what?
Well, this is one of my single most loved. I love this piece of advice. I've been doing my column 12 years now, giving advice. This is some of the best I've ever gotten. Sunset mode of mind. You want to take it all in. Think of a sunset. When we watch some gorgeous sunset, we don't sit there thinking, well, this is going to be all over soon. How horrible. We're looking at how beautiful it is, even as it's fleeting, even as there's that bittersweetness to it. So you want to take life in. You want to know, yes, it's fleeting, and there's some things that aren't great, but you want to take in the beauty too. Sunset mode of mind reminds you there's beauty in the sadness.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein at the Wall Street Journal. Her column is called Bonds. Coming up next, visualizing your finances.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. We save too little, spend too much, and what we buy often disappoints. Is there an antidote for this financially self-destructive behavior? One intriguing possibility? Visualization. In-depth analysis from Jonathan Clements, founder and editor at HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, explain.
Yeah, the fundamental financial problem, and more basic than everything else out there, is that we tend to favor today and give short shrift to tomorrow. So somehow, if we're going to save for the future, if we're going to make the necessary sacrifices today, we need to make the future extremely alluring. And one way to do that is with visualization. So if you want to buy a house or you want to retire in comfort, you know, it pays to think about what it's going to be like to have that house or to have that comfortable retirement so that you are motivated to make the necessary short-term sacrifices.
All right. So how do you visualize something like retirement when it's so much easier to do something like envision a new car, for example?
Yeah. You know, the Caribbean vacation and the new Lexus are something a lot more alluring than retiring in 20 years.
Right.
So there are a couple of things you want to do here. But first of all, you probably don't want to think about, you know, how wonderful retirement is going to be, because what the research has indicated is that if you think about how wonderful retirement is going to be, that in itself may satisfy you emotionally, and you may actually be less motivated to act. So instead of thinking about how wonderful retirement is going to be, you should think about how terrible it will be if you don't have any money. Mm. One of the things we know about humans is we tend to be so-called loss averse. We get more pain from losses than pleasure from gains. So thinking about how awful retirement would be if we didn't have any money, that can motivate us. And then the other thing we should think about doing is pondering the necessary steps involved in order to get to retirement. Because if we can visualize the steps, then we will be able to do that. And in the case of saving for retirement, you know, we might visualize, okay, we've got to sign up for the 401k plan. We're going to look through the menu of investment options. And we're going to talk to our spouse or our best friend about which ones we ought to pick. We're going to think about how next year we're going to increase the amount that we contribute to the 401k. You know, we might think about, okay, maybe I'll fund a Roth IRA as well. So you start thinking about the steps involved, and having done that mental practice run, you'll be better prepared to do it in real life.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written about using visualization for your money goals in order to avoid these self-destructive behaviors we're familiar with. You did write, though, toward the end of your piece about the caveat in all this. Explain that.
So when we visualize goals, we tend to visualize how great it is to achieve them. And this, for instance, is also why athletes do it. An athlete might visualize hitting a home run, or an athlete might visualize, you know, crossing the finish line first, and that vision will motivate them. So similarly, you know, we might think about how great it's going to be to buy that second home on the Jersey Shore. But when we visualize how great it's going to be to have that second home on the Jersey Shore, what we tend not to visualize is how, you know, it's going to be a drag every weekend to drive there and back, and how awful the traffic's going to be, how difficult it's going to be to deal with maintenance and repairs long distance. We don't really visualize all the extra costs involved, and, you know, how we're going to spend our weekend doing chores at a second place. So when you think about financial goals, don't just visualize the upside, also visualize the downside. And what you may discover is that the goal isn't nearly as alluring as you imagined, and perhaps you're better off using your time and money for something else.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert and founder of HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, what's it mean when you have 100,000 unread emails? Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box, fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Well, with a daily flurry of messages from friends and colleagues, plus an ever-flowing stream of solicitations, newsletters, and more, many of us are contending with email overload. How many emails are the right amount in your inbox? Charles Passy, admitted email hoarder at MarketWatch, has some insight. Charles, what's this about?
Well, people just, you know, it's a kind of almost like a form of hoarding. People just can't let things go. And they say, look, I like my emails because someone likened it to having mementos in a curio cabinet. So I guess that's kind of a silly way of putting it. But other people have said, look, I like to search my old emails in case something comes up. You know, as one person said, you know, it's one thing to have the email contacts, but having the actual emails gives me the context. So if I want to look up a previous conversation I had over email, or you know, details on a deal I was trying to do or something like that, that you know, there's a lot contained within our emails and I don't want to throw them out. So people have different reasons, but you know, let's just say we have a lot of emails. The average inbox has, according to one study, about 8,000 emails, but I found, you know, people with many more than that.
My goodness. All right, you're among them. You have almost a quarter million.
I'm guilty as charged. I have about 250,000 emails. And you know, I would add to that, I mean, in addition to the fact that I do like to look at old emails for details of various kinds and all that, I would also say that, you know, I find it just very hard to go through all my emails. I get about 500 work-related emails a day. I find it very challenging to go through all of those efficiently. And then what happens is what was started as a little task, you know, I'll say, well, let me catch up a month at a time, becomes a gargantuan task. There's no way I'm going to go through 250,000 emails. So I mean, at best, I can try to keep up with it on a daily, weekly, maybe monthly basis going forward, but there's no way I can undo the past. And as I said, there may be a lot there that I still want to hold on to.
We're speaking with Charles Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. He's written about workplace email overload. Somebody said in the story, too, if you have that many emails, you're not making decisions.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is a good point to be made about how does this affect your work life. And, you know, I talked to a few different people, business coaches, who really took a hard line against this. You know, one said, look, it's really just a form of clutter in your life. If you were talking about physical mail, would you keep, you know, 250,000 pieces of actual mail sitting on your desk? Think about that. That would be an avalanche of, you know, snail mail on your desk. It would be impossible. And it would clutter up your life. Well, they said, think about it the same way. What happens is that you tend to, that when you have that much email going on, you're just, it shows you're not responding to things.
Thanks, Charles. Charles Passy, email hoarder at MarketWatch. Coming up next, a pleasant surprise left behind for the owners of a new home. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Thanks for being with us. We'll finish with this. A few weeks after buying a home, the new occupants found something unusual, a message written on the pantry wall. Susan Smazinski of rural Newfield, New Jersey, told Fox News that when she read it, she got goosebumps and teary-eyed. Ms. Mazinski had actually lived next door to that home for some time before purchasing it and knew a bit about the couple who lived there previously. They apparently raised a family in the home, and according to the message on the wall, the home had many wonderful memories. The message read, "We loved, laughed, cried, and played here. We pray you will too. God bless." Ms. Mazinski said the home sat empty for some time before being listed, and though she wasn't considering buying the house, she went to see it when it went on the market because she admits she was being nosy. Ms. Mazinski did get the house, and now her daughter lives next door. She called it a parent's dream. By the way, she has no plans to touch that message on the pantry wall. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.